every single raw material we are utilizing in making the compost, which is the medium for growing the mushrooms, is actually agricultural waste. So, I mean, if you look at it, the main raw material for us is something called wheat straw, which the farmers in Punjab and Haryana are burning every year.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Indian Dream Trends. This is where we explore markets and ideas that are set to explode in the next 5 years and talk about the opportunities to build profitable businesses. This week, we're covering the field of high-tech and new-age farming. There are tons of niche farming opportunities that can be turned into massively profitable businesses. We wrote about them in our newsletter last week. We also released an episode with the largest seaweed producer in India. Those links are in the show notes. In the episode today, we talk about large-scale mushroom farming. We're joined with Avdesh Kumar, co-founder and CEO of Jiva Foods, India's third largest mushroom producer with a capacity of 4,000 kgs of mushroom per day, and they're just getting started. We speak about the challenges in setting up large-scale high-tech farms, the distribution channels, and the export potential. We also talk about the various opportunities that exist in the world of high-tech farming and agri-supply chain. Lastly, don't miss out on the heartwarming stories of the social impact of mushroom farming at the fag end of the episode. If you have any interest in setting up a business in the field of agriculture, I highly recommend you listen to the episode. Before we jump on, I have a request for you. If you like our content, please follow us on Spotify and rate us on Apple. I have a bet with Sahil that I'm close to winning, and your support will make that happen. With that, let's jump on to the episode. Thank you so much for joining us today, Avdesh. Thank you so much for taking time out. Really excited to have conversation around Jiva Foods and mushroom farming. But before we get there, tell us a little about your career prior to that and how did you land up with mushroom farming as a sector that you wanted to focus on?
Thanks for having me, on the show. So career has been quite interesting. So due to certain family circumstances, I actually started working when I was in the first year of my BCom. We shifted from Calcutta to Bombay, and that's when my dad got into tea trading. That's when I joined his business. I've been doing tea trading maybe a couple of years down the line. Once I graduated from BCom, we launched our own brand of tea, which was called Bagicha. And we were selling that in Nasik district. Nasik district is near Bombay, in the outskirts of Bombay, maybe 3 hours out. Did that for about maybe 5 to 7 years. I was obviously itching to get a management degree, and I also wanted to work in the corporate space for a while to understand the nuances, of how big companies work before launching my next venture. So we were looking out maybe 5 years, 6 years down the line. I was looking out for a strategic partner, who I could sell out the business to. Got a great value to sell the brand approximately in 2007. That's where we sold out the brand. And so then I joined ISB in 2008. Unfortunately, we graduated in 2009, which was the year of Lehman and Satyam. So that was obviously not ideal. So all the dreams which we had of working, it all went down the drain, right? But having said that, I got a great chance to work, in the internal strategy team of one of the country's leading clinical research organizations. At that point of time, it was a sunshine industry. Nobody knew much about what the hell is a clinical research organization. But I took the risk. I joined there. It was a senior position, reporting directly to the owners or the managing directors of the company and working on acquisitions and internal strategy. Worked there for a couple of years. Then, once the economy recovered, I got a good chance to work in a healthcare consulting company. I did that for a couple of years. And then I moved into impact space consulting for a couple of years. That's when I decided that, now it's time to start something else. So I had done a few projects in the space in agriculture and healthcare. But having looked at the spaces, we decided that agriculture is, something where there is a massive gap in the industry. Healthcare, pharma is quite well taken care of. Agriculture, there's a huge gap. I was convinced that, agriculture is the way forward. Traditionally, if you look at it, 55% of the India's population is kind of dependent on agriculture. Having said that, also, I was convinced that high-tech agriculture is the way forward for the country to move forward. Just like if you see some other countries like, say, Netherlands or China, and other countries have converted from traditional farming to high-tech farming, that's when it starts becoming a business and it just doesn't remain to be farming. That's how I left my job and that's how I started, getting into the agriculture space. Interestingly, I was always in touch with one of the owners of the clinical research organization who had joined in 2009. And over a casual lunch, we both realized that the food business is something in common. He also was very interested in getting into food. And we didn't know what in food, but we both wanted to get in food. that's when we decided over a lunch that, you know, we should explore the space together. Looking in hindsight, I don't know if it was a good decision or not. But after that lunch and considering that, you know, it required a full-time effort, that's when I quit my full-time job. My son was just born. Despite that, I quit my job. And together with my partner's support, we just delved into finding this new business opportunity full-time.
Interesting. The courage that would have taken, because as you said, you had this vague idea ki food business mein kuch karna hai, not knowing exactly what. And quitting at that point in time with a young son, the courage that would have taken would have been immense. Also, how does somebody deal with this idea of like, theek hai, kuch start karna hai, but you were delving out of your, you know, previous skill set. Like if it was something in healthcare, you could say that, yaar, 5-6 saal ka healthcare mein experience hai, kuch to figure out kar hi lenge. Or even if it's in the impact consulting space, you can bank on your existing network and try and get projects. But Ryan, getting into a completely new field, how were you able to sort of build the conviction ki kuch figure out ho jayega isme?
I mean, see, traditionally, as I said, my family has always been into the tea business, right? So tea business is also agriculture. And I had done a few projects for leading development banks, German development bank, actually, in the space of agriculture. Did a lot of projects, maybe 3-4 projects are for them of, you know, where are the gaps in agriculture in the country. So a lot of the data and a lot of the research was already done as part of my consulting projects. That's where I was convinced, you know, that karna hai to kuch khane peene mein hi karna hai. If you look at it, it's an old saying, right? It's healthcare, food, and entertainment. I honestly feel these are the three industries which are never going to see a downturn regardless of whatever happens in the economy, whether it's COVID, not COVID. These three industries are going to, I mean, if you have to take a cross in, you have to take a cross in. There's no alternative to that. So that's how we got into agriculture per se, or, you know, food. And I honestly, I had a lot of support from my partner at that point of time, not taking away anything from him. And we decided that we'll give it a 1 year's time. You know, so 1 year is like a hard stop. एक साल में कुछ आइडिया मिलेगा तो उसको करेंगे. इफ यू डोंट गेट एन आइडिया विद इन 1 year, यू नो, इट्स ओके, नो प्रॉब्लम, वी विल अगेन कंटिन्यू कैचिंग अप फॉर कैजुअल लंचेस हियर एंड देयर, बट नो हार्ड फीलिंग्स.
हाउ डिड यू कम अप विद द आइडिया? नाउ दिस इज वेयर ओवर द लास्ट 8 months वी हैव स्पोकन टू अ बंच ऑफ एंटरप्रेन्योर्स एंड वन ऑफ द क्लियर थीम्स दैट इज इमर्ज्ड इज whenever you want to start a profitable enterprise, not a venture scale enterprise, right? Something that's, you know, profitable and can be turned profitable at least in a couple of years, 3 years, right? You need to look at markets that already exist. You can't be thinking ki I will go create this market, I have this idea that will go change the world and all of that, right? As somebody who's tried my hands at agriculture, this is back in 2018 where a friend of mine and we worked for 6 to 8 months on a project where we were trying to develop a supply chain for clean food, where organic food and you know, biodynamic or hydroponic or whatnot. But one of the things that we eventually realized ki utna bada market hi nahi hai consumer side, right? Like aap kitna bhi kuch bhi kar lo, aap idealism mein jitna bhi reh lo, lekin utna bada consumer side mein market nahi hai, to aap kya karoge, right? And I think that's where I'm very curious on how did you figure out ki wo market research kaise kari to figure out mushroom is something that you wanted to get.
So as I said, it was a blank slate. I mean, we had nothing on the slate. We were open, we looked at a lot of industries. One was pretty clear that we wanted to look at industries which have barriers to entry due to capital investments. So I had a solid financial backing with my partner. So due to which we were able to, you know, kind of, we were confident of raising a lot of capital. So we didn't want to get into a farming of a tomato, for example, because that is something which anybody can do with a small pocket change of money as well. So we wanted to look at setting up an industry. That was very, very clear. Having said that, so what we did, we looked into a lot of things actually. We looked into dairy. We looked into pulping, processing of food, canning of food. I mean, looking at ready-made snacks, doing high-tech farming, not only of mushrooms, but a lot of other stuff which takes high-tech farming, like bell peppers and all this. We also looked at setting up a cold storage for potatoes, looking at cold store logistics. So we kind of looked at everything. So the key parameters, as I again said, was first is the barriers to entry. If you look at a barrier to entry, we had put a cap, like, you know, at a couple of million dollars. That is something which we wanted to do. So all industries below the couple of million dollars start falling away. Secondly is where we saw where we can build a brand. So, you know, having a brand in the market is also having its own value. So that's where we kind of, you know, having a brand also, like, you know, if you look at the dairy industry, to set up a brand, you need 3 times of your capital investment in marketing rather than, you know, kind of doing the actual industry. That's where, again, we kind of dropped out. We also looked at a lot of global markers, you know, what are the global trends which foods are doing well globally, that's where actually mushrooms started standing out. I mean, if you look at a country like China, there are certain farms. I mean, China is by far about the biggest producer of mushrooms in the world. They are controlling about 70 to 75% of the global market. There are certain farms which are producing over 250,000 kilos of mushrooms per day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's the kind of quantities you're looking at, right? So just looking at the whole market scenario, as such, looking at the global scenario, speaking to some of the other people, and we also spoke to a couple of private equity funds in India. So, you know, what's the interest? We got a lot of feedback, and that's where data jo hota hai, there is a limitation to data. Little bit, you have to also go on a gut feel. Looking at the gut feel is, you know, and some of the data which was there, we said, chalo, abhi mushroom ka industry karke dekhenge. So that's how we actually got into mushroom. So mushroom was shortlisted along with making tomato puree and along with setting up a dairy. So the reason we removed tomato puree is because there's no branding as such in there. So you are also then dependent upon weather, because if the weather is not favorable, tomato season mein nahi aayega, so you are gone. I mean, your factory remains closed for the whole year. So we wanted to be self-dependent. We didn't want to be dependent on the weather. Looking at all of these things, that's where mushroom came in. Because mushroom, we are self-sufficient. We are making everything on our own. We are not dependent on labor. We are not depending on weather. Not depending on other people. So for us, that was the key decision maker.
One more question before we go deeper into the aspect of mushroom farming, right? As you said, you had that capital backing. Now, in the business media today, most popular form of capital backing is venture capital, especially when you're starting out, right? Which comes with its own set of terms and conditions where you need to grow at venture scale and you need to keep raising a round of funding so that you give exit to your initial investors, right? The form of funding that you're talking about wasn't venture scale, right? It was more of, I'm becoming a partner to the business and I will come in, and the idea is to enjoy the cash flows at a later point in time, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Bang on. So it's not a venture capital. I don't call it an angel investing, nothing. It's two people join hands. I'm in with the sweat equity. The other person is coming with the capital. We both believe in the business. We both believe that there is a value to be created in the business in the future. So it's not the traditional form of funding that, you know, I'm raising an A series, B series, C series, and later on. Yeah. So that's not the situation with my business. Plus, considering how asset heavy the business is, so there is, you cannot run the business only on equity. There is a requirement of bank loans as well. So, you know, looking at the whole structure, this is it's a very traditional business, right? I mean, you look at setting up any asset heavy business, raising funding for that only on equity is almost impossible. You have to go in for debt, and venture debt is something which you're not interested in. So yeah, so I would feel the whole project has been personally funded.
With a mix of your partner putting in capital and then debt that you had to raise for the capex, some of the capex, right?
We raise it from the banks. From the traditional banks, a lot of banks give agriculture funding at a good, very attractive interest rate. So that's how we raise the capital.
Because this is high-tech farming, this is not as simple as ki zameen li aur usme dal diya aur usme fertilizer dal diya aur kuch na kuch to ug jayega if weather supports it, right? So there is a full blown process and you know the tech that goes behind this. How did you go about researching this? Wo kahan se seekha, kis se seekha? India mein log kar rahe the us time pe, bahar ja ke seekha. How did that happen?
So there are quite a few mushroom farms in India, and a lot of small ones and large ones. So I did a lot of research of talking to people, visiting some of the farms. We also visited some of the farms to understand what's going on. Once we started visiting these places, talking to people, we came to know, you know, we have to have a proper consultant who understands this whole thing. Because, I mean, for me to do it alone, the whole research, I mean, the whole calculation which goes into setting up a chilling plant and, you know, the air handling units and whole calculations of, you know, the blowers and this and that. I mean, it's a different ballgame altogether. No one can teach you that. So one thing was very clear, that we have to hire a proper consultant who understands this space. We shortlisted a few consultants. Maybe we made some mistakes along the way, but so that's how we started off. So we had a proper full-time project consultant who did the entire designing for us of the project.
So Avdesh, I've been in this space, right?
Yeah.
Consultants are dime a dozen. When we were exploring the hydroponics market, one of the things that we realized ki bahut log hain jo bolenge ki consultant hai, but what they are doing is basically learning while experimenting with you. They will experiment something with you and see ki chalta hai ki nahi chalta, aur uske karan wo dusra contract uthayega jaake. How do you now identify and weed out these people? And you briefly mentioned that, you know, there were some mistakes that were done. If you were to go do it again, how would you find these consultants and what would you look
for? So what happens is, the typical Indian mentality is to be kind of penny wise pound foolish. You know, we feel that, you know, we don't want to hire proper subject matter experts from maybe across the world. but we want to hire someone in India. If I were to look back, go back in the day, maybe 3 years, 4 years down the line again, what are the mistakes we made? One of the mistakes we made is like, you know, we did speak to a lot of people in Europe. We did. But then, you know, the costs which they speak about for their consultancy are like prohibitively high. And then you compare that to a fellow in India who says what is his consultancy fee. He feels like, I mean, this is like nothing. It's like piddly amount of money he's charging, right? So, I mean, just for example, the project consultant in India would charge you maybe, say, 10 lakhs or 15 lakh of rupees. But the project consultant from the, say, Netherlands, for example, would charge you maybe a crore, crore and 20 lakh. But having said that, if you look at some of the farms, I mean, I've done a lot of study across the last 3-4 years. If you look at the farms which are set up in the Netherlands, the kind of production they're giving, the kind of output which they're giving, the kind of efficiency which they have of conversion from compost to mushrooms are in a different stratosphere altogether. That amount, if I look back and calculate, that amount which you pay the consultant extra is recoverable within maybe 9 months to 10 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest mistakes we made was not to look at one of these international consultants coming in. So that's what I would have done. I mean, if I had a chance to go back 4 years, I would definitely look at getting in an international project consultant working in hand with somebody from India to look at the day-to-day execution. As you very correctly said, consultants are dime a dozen and they are actually experimenting in your project so that when they get the next project, they can say, haan, maine yahan pe kaam kiya hai. This is my resume. Now, you know, this is what we've done. Absolutely, what you said is bang on. So now what we've done, you know, after learning from these mistakes, now we've actually got someone extremely professional online to kind of come and look at what gaps we have had in our whole infrastructure. And post-COVID, we've actually been spending, we're creating a lot of investments in kind of redoing some of the infrastructure so that the plant can be up to, if not 100% international standards, at least 80% international standards.
Yeah, so I think one of the learnings is that when you're doing the project report and calculations, account for a professional consultant who knows what that person is doing and comes with a lot of credibility on what they've done already. One of the ways that we used to filter out, you know, when we were talking to hydroponic consultants was we used to tell them ki, acha, kaun si facility mein kiya hai? Can you take us and show us that facility? And half the people would like give random excuses. No, they're not allowed. You're not allowed. All of that. And that's a huge red flag. If that person can't show proof of like their work, that's a huge red flag. And then it's as good as you know, you're just getting mental support in nothing else, right? You're just getting mental support ki consultant hai aur wo jo bol raha hai wo sahi hai, but he's as good as you just thinking logically, trying to make some logical decisions which might or might not work out because they don't have the experience.
Absolutely, I completely bang on. I mean, that's what even we faced. And so we're still learning from a little bit of the mistakes we made. And now I think the person we've got online right now, I mean, he took me to at least 8 to 10 of his mushroom farms which he's constructed across the country. He is associated with someone in Netherlands. So now we are kind of confident that we've got the correct person. Another way to also look at a consultant is what we've learned is for these consultants, you have to incentivize, they have to be incentivized, or their payout rather has to be incentivized with the production of the company. It cannot be like, you know, tumne mere ko plan de diya, maine tumko paisa de diya. No way. You have to have a payout system of at least 2 years wherein they are getting a money every month based on production milestones, not on construction milestones.
That's a very good point. Yeah, incentives can solve a lot of these problems because most people who are not comfortable with this will start giving you random excuses ki nahi mujhe project pe chahiye.
Exactly. Bas. Abhi the right now the guy we've got, I mean, he's incentivized only for production. So he's based on production. We've already seen the results. Last 3-4 months, we've already been seeing his results. We were also evaluating setting up a small poly house project for, you know, growing some bell peppers because I feel that's the next state. I mean, I know we'll talk about that later. But the guys who I am talking to for the consulting of the project, it's completely based on production. I mean, I will spend the capex, no problem, because I know what capex has to be done. But I will give you money X rupees per kilogram of my production. So that's very, very clear.
Now, setting up that facility, we spoke about the initial challenges with the consultant and everything.
We're not even spoken about the main challenge. The consultant is a very, very small challenge. So if you look at the external challenges, I mean, I don't want to speak on record about the external challenges we faced, but I just want to mention that state government or the government really needs to stand up and make approvals such a simplified process, which is essential to becoming pro-business. They need to also provide local support so that a business can concentrate on establishing the business And I mean, not spending majority time in managing approvals, local issues, local political issues. I mean, there were actually certain times in the whole, you know, construction phase where me and my partner used to think that hum kya kar rahe hain? I mean, what are we doing? It's so frustrating to get these approvals. It's not even funny. So, you know, and these issues continue on a daily basis. Somebody will come knocking your door. Some party will come. Some person will come. I mean, we are trying to do something good over here, right? The government has to support. Honestly, I think that was one of the main challenges. So external challenges I told you about right now was this government support. Internal challenges we spoke about getting the proper team in place. The team in place is very critical.
So we discussed the challenges to set this up. And the way I think about this is, jo aapne pehle bola tha ki barrier to entry in terms of CapEx, there is also barrier to entry in just figuring all of these things out, right? Finding the right person, finding the right consultant, doing the government ka jo bhi, you have to get the approvals. There's barriers to entry there. So once you're able to get through those, then you know you're inside a fortress which is not easily penetrable. Koi bhi aake kal chalu nahi kar sakta ye, right? So you figured all of this out. Now, you know, I won't get into the technicalities of how mushroom is produced and all of that because that's nuanced. But once you figure all of this out, distribution channel, in a setup like this, you can't be completely dependent on going directly to consumer because you have fixed outputs and you need big bulk buyers, right? How did you figure out the distribution channel? Talk to us more about that. And what are the kind of margins that you see in the distribution channel?
So before we set up the mushroom business, obviously, there was a lot of market research which was done. I met personally a lot of customers across the country. I also met a couple of people in Dubai, one in Singapore, just to understand how the global business works. What we were to understand is, you know, if you have to go B2C in this business, it is practically impossible. I mean, B2C to chodo. I mean, even if I have to go and give it to a caterer or a hotel like a Taj in Bombay, it's not feasible. It's not practically possible given the logistics. What we were to understand is we have to go through the wholesale channel, which is the traditional selling channel, at least to start with. Then once you know, your quantities are getting out in the market, then, you know, maybe you can take out 10% of the quantity, try something new. Then take out 10% more, try something new. So when we started initially, it was completely through the wholesale channel. We are based in Bombay. We are very, very clear that we want to have a farm within maybe just 100 kilometers out of Bombay. There was a void of mushroom farms close to Bombay. Honestly, there is nothing. I think within the 250-kilometer region, there are no mushroom farms.
So, abhi uske pehle, where was the supply coming from?
So, Pune belt is a massive belt for Bombay. There are about 10 to 12 mushroom farms in Pune. Big and small both. So, that's how the mushrooms are coming. The mushroom quality which is coming was completely substandard. So, right now, if you see in the Bombay market, we are kind of dominant. It's taken us 2 years to get there, I mean, obviously. But right now, in the Bombay market, we have our set customers in the wholesale market who are completely loyal to us and they want only the Jiva brand. So we've kind of established a brand in Bombay, which no one has been able to do in the past. So now if you go to, you know, buy a mushroom, a customer is actually asking, mere ko Jiva ka mushroom chahiye. So that's how now we have been able to reach so far. Also, what we have done in the last 1 year post-COVID, I mean, pre-COVID, we were only going through the distributor route. Post-COVID, what we've done is we have also now started up with Nature's Basket and Reliance and Food Bazaar and Food Hall and the likes. You know, in Reliance, we are one of the three suppliers. Nature's Basket, in fact, we are exclusive. So there is no other mushroom being sold in Nature's Basket in Bombay apart from the Jiva mushroom. So that has kind of helped us in cementing the brand further. During the lockdown phase, we also experimented with doing direct home delivery of mushrooms. We set up a whole website to do online delivery. But I mean, obviously now post-COVID, it's not going to work out. So that we have tied up with now another company who does a lot of other products apart from mushrooms. They also exclusively market Jiva mushrooms under their website.
So from a unit economics perspective, what are the margins that you can take? What are the margins does a wholesaler get? And like retailer ko jab tak milta hai, tab tak kya markup hota hai?
So I mean, typically say if I am selling 1 kilo of mushrooms for say about 125 rupees a kilo, to the distributor. That distributor would sell it in turn to the retailer, say the local sabji wala, saag wala, who is outside your building. we would sell into him for approximately 160 rupees a kilo. Okay. And the 160 rupees a kilo, then for the retailer who's a sabjiwala, becomes 250 rupees a kilo approximate. That's also, so the retailer actually makes a larger margin because he has to also keep a scope of 20-25% of wastage. So considering this is a perishable product, abhi mere haath se maal nikal gaya, mera kaam khatam ho gaya. Distributor ke haath se maal nikal gaya, uska kaam khatam ho gaya. But the retailer is the guy who keeps a 20-25% margin of waste. So that's the reason. So that's the margin looks big. But I mean, yeah, I mean, if you reduce 20-30% of the margin, so it all kind of equates out, yeah.
And does this market has a credit system going on? Do you have to give on credit? Does the wholesaler have to give on credit?
So typically we work in a very different way, apart from the other mushroom farms. So our payment terms to distributors are very different from what other people experience. I mean, I wouldn't want to get into that. But typically the wholesalers to retailers, they have a complete credit margin going on because they are not supplying them only mushrooms. Keep that in mind. They are giving them all the exotic vegetables. Usko mushroom bhi denge, zucchini, broccoli, cherry tomatoes, mushrooms, X, Y, Z, everything is given to them. So what these guys do, distributors, I mean, even we read about it in the books or on the net, wherever we read, the distributors are the guys who earn the maximum money. What they do is they'll give one retailer, one day they'll say, you take it on credit. I'll give you credit for 2 months. Now that guy cannot go to another distributor because he's literally married to this guy until he pays him his money, right? So that's where the distributors start earning their money in the other products. They start charging them interest, 2% a month or something like that.
Exactly.
We even tried to go down to the last mile to the retailer, but I mean, from a logistic perspective and the kind of quantities we are producing, it's not feasible at all.
Yeah, I think wo apne aap mein ek different operation hai, right? You're already dealing with the manufacturing, like the variability and the headaches that come with like doing manufacturing. Uske upar se to manage the retailer segment is a completely different ballgame.
Then you can do it. I'm not saying you can't do it, but only for one product of mushroom, you can't. So apart from the modern retail chains, we've also kind of cracked a couple of other people who are, say, you know, during the lockdown phase, a lot of these B2C startups started up. So we are supplying exclusively to about 8-10 of those startups. Even, you know, people who, you know, kind of process the mushrooms, they supply it to the larger pizza chains. As I said in the start, you have to take 10%, try something. Then you take the next 10%, trying something. Then take 10%, try something. We are in the process of trying to do something different which no one has done. We're also going to come up with some social media campaign. People in the industry are laughing at me there. What are you doing? Social media mushroom ko karta hai kya? I'm going to try it. I mean, it's going to cost me a few thousands of rupees, but I mean, big deal. I'm going to try it and see it. If I can set up my brand, I mean, big, why not? So we are trying to do a lot of different things under Jeeva, traditionally in the mushroom industry, which no one has done. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like a zero or a hero game, right? I mean, we could come out as winners. You come and lose, a big deal. I mean, at least there's no regrets. Try to kiya maine.
Haan, but the thing is, agar 10 cheeze try karte ho, aur usme se ek bhi chal jata hai, where you are the pioneer, you make up for all the other 9 that fail.
Exactly. It's like a private equity or a VC fund, right? I mean, you invest 10 people, I mean, like whoever invested in Google, I don't remember the name. I mean, one Google was enough to take out 99 of the other investments, right? So we're going to try the same thing. We're continuously going to try new things. We're going to continue disrupting the market in a non-traditional space. So yeah, I mean, that's it. That's what we're here for.
So one of the disruptions that the original idea for mushroom came to me when I was reading about what's happening in the US around mushroom coffees and you know, using these exotic varieties of mushroom, tiger mane and chaga and whatnot, right? India is primarily button mushroom, right? And with a little bit of oyster on top of that, right? Do you see innovation happening there? Do you see there is demand for like other kinds of mushroom? Because mushroom, when we talk about mushroom, but there are so many varieties underneath that, right? Do you see innovation happening there? And from a production perspective, is it a completely different form of production to produce these things or more or less same?
So actually we did experiment and we are experimenting currently with portobello mushrooms. So portobello mushrooms are, you know, have this similar growing or cultivation, you know, things as the white button mushroom. Having said that, that experiment is costing us about 1 lakh rupees a month. We are still trying it. I mean, we've given it about 6 months to try till June. The market is there, but it is such a niche market in India right now. We are realizing it, which is why maybe the other bigger farms in the country are not doing this kind of mushroom. So, I mean, that's only portobello. Portobello is still extremely famous. I mean, extremely popular, right? But now if I look at a shiitake, Shiitake, the whole growing condition is completely different. So, or an enoki, or as you said, a tiger mane, or an oyster. So I can't grow those at my facility right now. And in India, 99.6% of the market is white button mushroom. So for the change to come, I honestly feel it might take at least a decade or so for the change to come. And I mean, we are trying with portobello, and I said we are burning money every month, but we're going to try it for 6 months and let's see what happens. I mean, someone like the modern retail chains and all don't want to touch that because they are not confident of customer demand coming in for those.
This is where I think discussing exports is interesting, right? Because China, obviously 70% of the production, they are massive exporters of mushroom.
True.
India is like nothing when it compares to some of the other countries. How big do you see is the export potential? Is it easy to export mushrooms out of India? Is there demand for Indian mushrooms out of outside?
So we've done some study on this. The demand for fresh mushrooms, like what we buy in the market, that is minuscule, because when you go to the export market, like say, for example, if you go to Dubai, they are importing mushrooms from Netherlands. The kind of mechanization, the kind of technology which they have in place for their mushroom farms, I mean, for a typical Indian farm to compete is impossible. And the kind of investments you look at in setting up a Dutch technology plant versus an Indian plant, it's like multi-fold. It's not even like 1x or 2x. It's like looking at multiple x. That's the problem. And same if you go to, say, a Singapore market, again, they are importing it from... I mean, if you look at China, they are heavily mechanized, heavily technology-based. So they're not running it like a typical agriculture industry. It is a proper technology-based industry. For us to get there, I mean, it's tough, but not impossible. We will be trying it later this year. I mean, we are going to try fresh mushrooms and we are going to try canned mushroom as well.
Is canned an easier market?
Canned is an easier market, but then the realizations and the profit margins, then you drop down to single digits, right? So then it becomes very non-attractive that way. So that's why from India, nobody is exporting fresh button mushrooms right now. No one is doing that.
Even to Southeast Asian countries, Africa, no potential there?
See, mushrooms don't travel well. So that's another problem. Fresh mushrooms don't travel well. So, you know, kind of sending it to Africa, if you're looking at like a 48-hour or a 50-hour journey, by the time the mushroom reaches, I mean, mushroom is supposed to be added fresh. So, our strict instructions to our people is what I produce today has to be consumed tomorrow. So, you know, doing that, if you go to Africa where you're traveling for 3 days and then you're selling it on the fourth day, I mean, the quality will start deteriorating very fast.
So, shuruaat mein, when you started this, because of the perishability of the product, were there risks in not having a stable distribution channel, or were you able to control production where you were able to, you just meet the existing demand and not produce anymore?
So in the initial phases, obviously there were days where we could not sell out our entire materials, that we were prepared for that mentally. We did not want to stop production because of no market. I mean, that was part of our business plan where we had kind of incorporated certain losses happening for the first 6 months or 9 months. We did a crazy due diligence in marketing. And also for other, I mean, you said about export, but there are other markets out of Bombay also. So, you know, where materials have to go by flight or by train. So, Bangalore or Odisha or West Bengal or something. So, we actually designed and invested in some special packaging material. I mean, for example, insulated boxes with ice gel packs, which keep the mushrooms as fresh as possible. So, you know, I mean, sending by train, overnight trains, I mean, we are able to comfortably do that.
And cost efficient, significantly more cost efficient, right?
Significantly cost efficient, because outside markets, you get a better realization also than Bombay market. The transportation cost is comfortably taken care of.
This is interesting. You get better realization outside than Bombay. I would think Bombay is the cream.
You'll be shocked. I mean, highest per capita consumption of mushroom is in the state of Odisha.
What?
I'm not even kidding you. So, for example...
It's like
the in thing. So, in Bombay, if you go for a vegetarian wedding, if you don't have paneer, the person is a poor person. So in Odisha, if you don't have mushroom, you're a poor person in Odisha. So, that's how it works.
Did not know this. Odisha, of all states.
Of all the states, yeah. Odisha is the highest per capita consumption. I mean, for them, it's a staple diet. For like Hawas, I mean, for us, it's maybe a paneer is a staple diet. For them, it's a mushroom.
Interesting. Better realization in terms of margins also?
Yeah, margins, I mean, profitability plus the whole dependence on the markets also. So, Odisha, you know, West Bengal, so on. I mean, these are good markets to look at.
Now, let's shift gears in other kinds of high-tech farming. I don't know if you know this. Recent budget, there was a talk of seaweed farming and setting up a park in Tamil Nadu for seaweed farming, which got me thinking on what are the other forms of high-tech farming that India should potentially explore, given that these are not completely dependent on like nature, you know, Barish and all of these, and the traditional problems that the Indian agriculture ecosystem has of, you know, small land holdings and not being able to do mechanized farming and all of that. The only way to get around this is large scale high tech farming, which is what China and Netherlands and a lot of these places, as you originally pointed out, have done. Have you come across other sectors where high-tech farming can be done?
For us, I mean, for a growth perspective, we are maybe looking at getting into some bell peppers. That's one thing where we believe there is a void in the market currently. I think apart from that, we are also looking at some other, I think most of the crops which you look at in the country, like leafy greens, if you look at the hydroponics. So, you know, all of these have a tremendous scope if it is done properly. The market is there. People want to eat good food. You know, getting the good food to people is very important. So, I mean, even if it is like a cherry tomato, for example, if it is done properly in a hygienic fashion, if you're giving a person a good quality, I can guarantee you that at least 50% of the population of the country will not mind paying their 1 rupee extra per kilo to get a better quality product.
But that's the thing, right? When I was doing, at least this is back 2-3 years back, and things might have changed there. But people who are doing hydroponics, let's say Nature's Miracle or a bunch of other people who are doing hydroponics in the north, they would sell at a food hall. And this could be not because of their fault or whatever, but because of the perishability and everything, 1500 rupees a kg for lettuce, which is where I feel that then you limit the market significantly. People are okay paying a 10, 20, 30% premium for something that's clean and good and all of that. But when you talk about 2x, 3x, then people are going to use it as like an occasion thing.
Correct.
At best. And which is where I think that's what you're pointing out if done right.
Yeah. So, I mean, hydroponics, with all due respect, it's a very good field. I agree with that. But what we have realized is, as you bang on, I mean, the market for hydroponics is 1% of the population. So you have to decide whether you want to cater to that 1% of the population, or you want to cater to 20%, or you want to cater to 100%. So I think it's all upon where you want to focus your attention. I mean, there is a market for that 1% also, I mean, if done properly. So, I mean, you know, you have the biggest families of the country who will purchase anything you produce, right? So, I mean, all the imported blueberries are being purchased by that 1% of the population. Typical people would not, you know, purchase blueberries at 300 rupees a kilo or something like that, right? So what we're looking at is also, like, as I said, the next leg for us is going to be bell peppers, for example. Bell peppers is something, again, which not everybody in the country is eating. Maybe only 20-30% of the people are eating because it's perceived as expensive. Like, even how mushrooms are perceived as expensive. But, I mean, if you look at it, when you make the saag bhaji of mushroom, it turns out to be more cost effective than maybe something else. So, from our perspective, we are not looking at getting into hydroponics or something. We are going to be doing the traditional farming, but in the proper way.
Controlled environments.
So, even the bell peppers, we were looking at setting up a pretty big facility for bell peppers, actually, before the whole lockdown happened, before COVID struck us. So, probably we'll revisit that next year. But, I mean, if the whole bell pepper project takes off, I think, again, we'll be one of the largest suppliers to Bombay in the next 2-3 years.
Any other opportunities that you're bullish on in the Indian agriculture space? What else do you think will be solved in the next 5-10 years, or needs to be solved, where there's enough money to be made?
So, supply chain is something where there's massive amount of gaps, massive amount of monopolies being created by a few players, for example. So, you know, the farm to fork model. So we are literally farm to fork with one person in between. So the whole farm to fork model needs to be solved. If the middlemen start getting cut off, you will have much better quality being delivered. I mean, if you see we have done a lot of research, right? So if you see the tomato which leaves a village called Samshedpur in Nasik district, that tomato, by the time it comes to your house, I mean, it's deteriorated by at least 50% in terms of quality. So the farmer is selling it to the middleman for 1.5 to 2 rupees, or maybe 3 rupees a kilo. By the time you're buying it at your house, you're paying like 40 bucks a kilo. And it takes that amount of time it takes to travel is like about 10 to 12 days. So I'm talking about one tomato. We actually followed that one tomato from that village to somebody's house. So it takes 10-12 days. If you are able to get that tomato, which is plucked today, at your house, maybe in 2 days, I still don't mind paying the same price because the quality I will get is going to be fantabulous.
And then you're actually supporting the producer of it, right? That 40 rupees is going to, to a larger extent, is going to go to the producer of it, who can then mechanize the farms, do a better job, all of those things.
Exactly. And what happens if the market goes down? These guys have literally throw away the farm. They throw away the produce. They throw away the onions. They throw away the tomatoes. We never hear about all those things. We never read about all those things. But I mean, these are actually facts of life. They have to invest money in throwing it away because they can't sell it because nobody's buying it. That's unfortunately the harsh reality of farming in India.
I completely 100% agree. So this was back when I was trying to figure out the supply chain for clean food and all of that. And I think 6-8 months down the line, we realized ki yaar ye market hi it's not that big. And one of the things that we did at the fag end to see if there was anything that we could still do was we went to the largest mandi, Azadpur Mandi,
of course. Yeah.
Exactly, right? We've tried to figure out ki idhar kya hota hai, like where are the producers coming from, what's the markup and all of that. It was mind-blowing and disheartening to see how the farmers are exploited, because wo sare jo jinke paas license hai APMC ka, they've colluded. It's straight up collusion ki isse upar to price dena hi nahi hai. Wo mooli ka bhaav, usko 5 rupaye milna hai to 5 hi rupaye milega, wo kahin par bhi jaake bech le.
So Azadpur Mandi, even I have done the whole research. I have stood there in the mandi for maybe 2 days. I was there 3 years back. I have stood in the APMC market in Vashi also. It is a complete monopoly game. I mean, seriously, the government needs to really, really support this. I mean, the farmers need to get their due, man. I mean, not the middlemen. The middlemen are literally driving around in their Mercs and their BMWs. And these guys don't have food to eat. I mean, it's sad. It's really sad. I mean,
somebody who has the smallest hole in that Azadpur Mandi, like a kuch nahi hai uski dukaan, bas uske paas wo ek license hai, jiske karan wo wahan baitha hua hai. He has crores and crores of rupees. But he's operating out of there because that's monopoly ban gaya udhar, kuch nahi karna hai.
Correct.
Which is where this is political and we might not get into this, which is where I do think the farm laws were in the right direction, if not perfectly fine and all of that. I do agree ki it's black and white nahi hota hai, gray area hota hai bahut kuch. But they were definitely in the right direction to getting the farmers their right dues.
I completely agree with you on that view. I mean, that's required. I mean, even if we look at our level at a high-tech agriculture level, we do require these norms to come in. Right now, it's the middlemen who are making the money. I mean, our business also, my biggest distributor drives a Merc. So, I mean, that's it. I mean, I don't need to say anything else apart.
A big part about agriculture is the employment aspect, is the social aspect. Given the kind of population we have in the country, agriculture is a huge industry to provide employment, right? Employment is just one aspect of it. But do you see the kind of stuff that you are doing, or people who are getting into high-tech agriculture, is there a social element also in the whole thing?
Yeah, so I think that's a very interesting question. There is a massive social impact, at least being created from the mushroom business. There are two aspects to it. One is the raw materials and one is the people. If I look at the raw material aspect of it, every single raw material we are utilizing in making the compost, which is the medium for growing the mushrooms, is actually agricultural waste. So, I mean, if you look at it, the main raw material for us is something called wheat straw, which the farmers in Punjab and Haryana are burning every year. So that's our main raw material. So we are the mushroom industry is one of the largest buyers of agricultural waste. Apart from wheat straw, we are also purchasing chicken manure. Chicken manure is your poultry shit, which typically, again, farmers are burning or throwing away. We are again purchasing poultry manure as part of our raw material. If you look at it, typically we are basically converting agricultural waste into raw material from which we are actually producing food. So we are actually reworking the whole cycle. Then whatever compost is left, that we are doing some sort of small processing, adding some enzymes into it. And that is actually again reused as fertilizer in certain industries like corn and banana, everything. So if you look at the whole cycle of raw materials, we are buying agricultural waste, which is typically burnt by farmers, converting that into food, processing it and selling it as a fertilizer to other industries. So on the raw material front, I think that's a massive thing which we're doing. And if you look at the, as you correctly said, on the labor force, or the, I don't call them laborers, I call them workers. More than 60% of our workers are actually local ladies. So, I mean, you're looking at about employment of approximately maybe 100 to 150 ladies who are typically devoid of any other type of employment, or they are subject to tough labor in the sun. Okay. So at the mushroom farm, even in summers when there's 45 degrees or 47 degrees outside, because of the temperature controlled environment, if you come and visit the farm, ladies are actually working with sweaters on. It's like fascinating. You have to see it to believe it. You know, I mean, it's like unbelievable. So we actually have, you know, we've actually distributed sweaters in the month of May to ladies to work and, you know, wear and work at the farm.
Crazy.
And these ladies typically come from very, very harsh backgrounds. I mean, you know, typically what we hear of, you know, the stories of these ladies. And then, you know, when you hear about how they love working for Jiva, for example, and how we've turned their life around. I mean, whatever setbacks financially we've had in the company the last 3 years, once you talk to them and once you understand the impact you're making on their lives, I think that's enough to forget any losses and just, like, you know, kind of this smile and just walk away. So
100%, right? When you can give somebody the opportunity to earn for themselves, the kind of impact you have on their self-esteem and the confidence of, like, not taking shit that society is throwing at you, or, you know, your family is throwing at you, or your husband is throwing at you. Just that sheer confidence saying, ki yaar, I can earn my own bread and I can live my own life. The kind of impact that can do is significant. So kudos to you.
We've seen that. I mean, you know, we've seen that. So some days when the production is higher, the lady's working late. So our company policy is very clear. We have a dedicated four-wheeler to drop the lady to her house, even if it is 30 kilometers away, and come back if she's working beyond 7 p.m. We actually had instances where, you know, the lady's husband has come at 6 o'clock on the gate of the farm, and, you know, he's drunk and he's shouting and screaming, like, you know, where is my wife? Where's my wife? What's she doing here? The wife actually goes to the gate and says, you go home. The company will drop me home in the four-wheeler. I will finish the work and I will come. So all this stuff, if you see, it's like, damn. Like, I mean, you just forget any mishaps you had in your life. And you're like, you know, we have to get this company running off for these people. That's it.
I can only imagine the satisfaction that you get on, like, you know, working with these people and the kind of impact.
Yeah, it's a different level altogether. Yeah.
Thank you for doing what you do. And it was great talking to you. It was great understanding this industry. Whenever I'm in Bombay next, I'm going to hit you up and try and see if I can visit the farm.
For sure, 110%. I mean, you have to come to the farm now.